Absolute. Bob the Infallible. Bob the Keeper of Pet Roosters. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Monday, November 3rd, 2014. Primetime Sports is on your radio, on your television, coast to coast. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation. Bob McCowan and Paul Jones in our Toronto studios. In a few minutes, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, John Gibbons, will join us. Blue Jays trading first baseman DH, more DH than first baseman, Adam Lynn to the Milwaukee Brewers, getting right-handed pitcher Marco Estrada in return. They also declined options on Brandon Morrow, Sergio Santos, and Dustin McGowan. Picked up the options on Happ and Toley, and Kevin Seitzer leaves to go to Atlanta. So lots of stuff has gone on. Not big-time dramatic stuff, but a lot of little things.
Enough.
Time to talk to the manager about what the hell's happening here. So he'll join us in a few minutes. But first, here's our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. So, Mr. Ryan, it was not so many weeks ago that I sat here, and I assume I said this to you as well as to the audience in general, that I was concerned that the New England Patriots may have finally hit that wall that they couldn't climb over. Of all the dumb assessments I've made over the course of the last 40 years, and that's a considerable list, I acknowledge, this might have been the pièce de résistance.
Join the club. In this very TV station where I am sitting in anticipation of another chance to humiliate myself, I declared when asked the following question, when they were 2-2, what do you think their final record will be? And I said 7-9. So, you know, it's a universe. It's just a lesson of not putting your hand on that stove when that stove is... People at the level of greatness of Brady and Belichick, I suppose that's the lesson here. But the number one thing I find fascinating about this is not that Brady has proven that given surrounding cast, he still is very, very good. Not that Belichick is personally someone. But how they did this with the line, Bob, the fact is that the greatest thing, the worst thing about them at the time that they were humiliated by Kansas City was they had chaos with their offensive line.
It was horrible.
Chaos. No team in the league had a more chaotic situation with new people, old people, mixing people. For the first four games, the alignment of the five offensive linemen didn't bear any resemblance to each other. And then suddenly, between the debacle against Kansas City and their turnaround against Cincinnati, they seem to find a formula, and now they're settled, and they have a nice, solid, you know, representative NFL offensive line, which, by the way, kept Brady so comfortable yesterday he could have played in a tuxedo. And how that happened is what I'm just wondering.
Hey, Bob, Paul Jones here. When
Hi, Paul.
I think of that debacle, as you called it, and Belichick being grilled on it, or, well, attempted to be grilled on it. And he just, do you remember what he kept saying?
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
Getting ready for Cincinnati. And to me, that was, I'm going to go in there, and we're going to fix this thing, and we're going to be just fine. Okay? It was a wake-up call. It was a wake-up call that he could, and coaches always get their players' attention when they lose, and boy, was that a loss. But it just seemed to me, Bob, it just seemed to me that was like, okay, this crap is going to stop. We're going to fix this. And here we are, you know, a winning streak later.
A winning streak that has some improving week by week, by the way, and more and more the offense fills into place as the communication and trust between Brady and Brandon LaFell takes place. We knew, if Gronkowski were to regain health, they would have an irreplaceable asset. And he has regained health, and they have the best tight end in the league. And the debate, I love opening up always, it's so much fun. When healthy, the greatest practitioner at this position the game of football has ever known. He is the greatest tight end of all time in the short run. Now, I don't know, career, you can talk all the guys you want. Start with Gonzalez, fine. Nobody has ever played the position better than Gronkowski is playing it right now, which is a repeat of the way he was playing it before he was injured the first time.
Wow.
Well, and
can't
Bob,
argue that.
Bob, I'm not quite of the same vintage as you and Mr. McCown beside me, but sitting with my dad and watching guys from like John Mackey all the way up, the rules have aided that. You can't touch a guy now. You can't breathe on him. And you got a guy like...
I've heard this today also. But John Mackey is where it starts. You know, there were before, when it really started technically is Ron Kramer and Ditka. Well, Ditka
yes.
was 6'1", 225, as he pointed out to the world this morning. And Kramer was a big fellow. And then Mackey was a marauder. And I still say the best of John Mackey is a highlight package not to be missed.
Mm-hmm.
But do you honestly think, come on, look at this guy. Do you honestly think it makes a damn bit of difference about the rules that he couldn't have done this 15 years ago? He is 6'7". He weighs 260 pounds. He's a marauder. He's a destroyer, and he's oblivious. You know, the only way you can hurt him is to hurt him the way he was hurt, which is go for his knee. This is a specious argument. If anybody's going to try to make it, to try to downplay greatness, you're looking at historic greatness. You're looking at a position mastery. You're looking at the position that has never been played any better than it's being played with this guy right now, period, and enjoy it until the next clown of a defensive back, as T.J. Ward almost did again last night, by the way, tries to take him out at the knee. I mean, this is just, you know, anyway, where were we?
Well, let's go to the – I mean, there's no doubt that Gronkowski's arrival and his presence in the New England lineup makes everybody around him, certainly on offense – I don't think about defense, but offense better. But Brady is still continuing to prove his extraordinary skill set. And last night what I saw – I mean, we saw a record 110 pass attempts by two quarterbacks – in regulation time, the most in the history of the National Football League. I didn't feel like that was happening during the course of the game. It wasn't until afterwards they went, holy crap. But having said that, and no disrespect to Manning, it's every game I watch Brady play, I just become more and more impressed with his skill set, abilities, mentally and physically. So many pinpoint passes last night into tight coverage, ball thrown exactly where it had to be. And I know it's not that way every week, but you start wondering, I mean, he's high on that pantheon of great quarterbacks in the history of the National Football League. How high is he, though?
Well, there's no doubt that he's going to go down historically as a top five and a top three, and a top three perhaps, and maybe even the best. I mean, I'm a little hesitant, just artistically. You know, these arguments are all what we want to make them. We all have our own rule, our own set of criteria, and the fact is, it's all done with his brain and his arm, and nothing to done with his legs. Whereas there have been other quarterbacks, and there is one right now who is at the who is at his all-time level, namely Aaron Rodgers, who can help himself with his legs. And Luck is a young man who can help himself with his legs,
right.
And Brady can't, and neither can Manning. So they're traditional, old-fashioned, quote unquote, pocket passers, and they are the highest practitioners of the art I think that we've ever known. Throw Montana in, you can't dismiss him.
He's there.
I've always had a little reservation about him because it seemed to me that he was the ultimate systems quarterback in that West Coast offense. But you know, his trump card were once and for always and forever be 4 Super Bowls, 4-0, 11 interceptions, no 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's the great trump card with Joe Montana that no one can take away from him that the other guys can't match. And so these arguments are fun, no question. But and you're talking about pocket passers, that you're talking about two of the handful of greatest with Manning and Brady. You're right about Brady and the way he's throwing it right now. What's interesting, Bob and Paul, is that in the beginning of the year, he was at the bottom of everybody
yes.
in the universe in 15 yards and beyond passing.
Yep.
Everything for him was dink and dunk and then getting a little yak. And he's down his long bomb passing was awful. Well, lately, now he's back throwing a lot of 15 and 18 and 20-yard passes with great accuracy, which is the was the way you win in this league. And so, yes, he's throwing the ball now better than he has at any point all season. And you can tell us. But his belief and confidence in who he's throwing to, what, in the beginning he was throwing to one guy, Julian Edelman. He was
right.
throwing Edelman for five-yard gains. Now he's got LaFell, who is a big receiver, which is always essential, and he's got the aforementioned Gronkowski, who's unparalleled, and so he's got a little bit better, on the menu there for him.
So which is more important, the great receiver or the great quarterback?
Oh, you have to start with the quarterback. But for the receiver, I mean, I often think that you ought to parse when we're talking about quarterback numbers, and I always laugh, well, not laugh, but I always and smirk a little bit. So I say, so-and-so's just completed 11 passes in a row, 15 passes in a row. Well, more than likely, at least two or three of those were excellent catches of balls that could have been missed as a rule. You need to have excellent receivers to put up numbers, there's no question. But Brady has had at least 1 year, 2009, when you go check who he was throwing to, or 2006, I think, was another one, and you ask, how did he throw 3,000 yards with those guys? You know,
yeah.
Who are those guys? And people have forgotten those guys. He has done that as much as any quarterback in our time has done that. He has made, as I like to say, 100-yard receivers out of hat racks or coat racks, and he can do that, and Manning can do that too.
Bob, we asked Richard Deitch this in the last hour, and Bobcat and I were talking about this, and I had this argument with a bunch of uneducated basketball boobs in Orlando on Friday night when we were there before the Raptors and the Magic. One game, Brady or Manning? Same team. Guys are saying, well, it depends on the team.
Equal?
You have the team, the same team, one game.
On the off chance that a vacationing Bostonian is listening to this broadcast.
No, you're not.
I am not about to diss Brady in favor of Manning. I trust Brady. I mean, if I were in Denver, I'd trust Manning. But one game, Brady's fit. I mean, last couple of weeks, could you ask more from what he's done now?
You know, and to me, it brings up what you said about Montana. I look at Montana and he wasn't one of those guys, as you said, that could really beat you with his legs. But in terms of smarts, knowing the system, the West Coast offense, where the reads, the checkdowns, who to go, who will be open in what situation, the guy was tough to beat. And I see Brady very much the same way.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that because let's say two things here. Number one is I always go back to, with Montana, the 1990 Super Bowl, the 55-10 execution. That's what it was. It was an execution of the Broncos in which he sliced and diced them to such a surgically precise and entertaining degree that it was a route that I really enjoyed as a neutral, just watching him do what he did. Now, you're right. And secondly, when I saw Brady early on, the first year, and certainly by the second year, no, by the end of the first year, the year he takes over from Bledsoe, the year he becomes a Super Bowl winning quarterback, I hope I wrote this is a pup out of the Montana litter. This is Montana Redux, and I think that's a very good comparison.
Well, let's put that aside for the moment, yeah. and move on to some other interesting. Oh, one more football thing before mm-hmm. we go. The San Francisco 49ers, of which I think something was expected, really making a case for them being nothing more than mediocre. And Colin Kaepernick, who was the flavor not so long ago, can he recover? Can he rebound? He has been ordinary for quite a while now.
Something is clearly amiss, and to the point where you have to believe that it's all stemming from a disenchantment, shall we say, with Harbaugh. He's worn thin, and I think he may always be one of those Billy Martin kind of guys
that
is a comet flashing across the sky with his fiery personality, his unquestioned brain power, but there's something about him that wears on people. They're imploding. They're not making the playoffs. They keep playing like this.
No way.
I mean, and Kaepernick is a victim here. I think there's something very bad going on, and they can deny all the stuff they want about what's happening with Harbaugh, but clearly something is happening. Just think how close last year. I don't think any of us would dispute the idea that if Seattle was number one, San Francisco was 1A, and there was very little to choose between those two, and that what Seattle did in the Super Bowl, San Francisco could easily have matched, I think. Now, both of them have fallen back a notch this year. Seattle will still, well, there's no guarantee they're making it, if you look at the standings, but they'll probably will pull themselves together and make it, but they do not see, unless there's some miracle elixir out there, how San Francisco's going to make it. And I think that, you know, if Harbaugh, you know, if he gets his mail next year in Ann Arbor, Michigan, it sure wouldn't surprise me.
Bob, is it one of those situations, and Harbaugh looks like one of those guys, five-year contract, three-year act. I mean, he like he could wear thin on you. Is it one of those situations where, all right, you hate to blame the coach or turn it over and fire the coach, but maybe this is a situation where you've got a quarterback, you've got some talent, you've got pieces that they just need a new voice.
We've seen Kaepernick perform at a very high level. And he's not performing at that level anymore. Now, are they restricting him from running to take those sacks? When I was not watching the game, naturally, because I was, I wasn't, but I was looking at my Twitter, frankly, and when I kept seeing five sacks, six sacks in the first half, you know, what is this?
Yeah.
Pasa a key. I'm going, what is this going on? And I had no idea. And then you think about it. I mean, there's a guy clearly, is he being told to stay home? I mean, is he not? It's just, I don't know what's going on. You need somebody from San Francisco writer to tell you what's going on. But I'm just thinking there's something's going on and it's not good. And I have to think it all starts with, as I said before, a disenchantment at the very least with Harbaugh.
What's going on with Ben Roethlisberger? He ain't good, is he?
You know, he can be. I love Ben Roethlisberger as a player, and I'm fascinated by him. As an opponent who's seen him and up, and I'm a terrified of that guy. What we're seeing here is what I always worry about. This guy can do. His arm, his strength is superb. Someone said this morning down on TV here, one of the commentators, that he's the most accurate long thrower in the game today. And meanwhile, look what he did yesterday. The six touchdowns, five of them were 15 yards or more. This wasn't dink and dunk stuff. He's on an extraordinarily high level. Plus, I talked earlier about guys that can help themselves with their legs. You know, he's a monster. It takes two people to bring him down. He does, quote-unquote, extend plays. When he plays like this, you say, do I need anybody better than this? The answer is no, you don't need anybody better than this. And they're riding him right now back into the contention.
Yeah, it's just one of those guys that, you know, there are quarterbacks that I would fear. And when the schedule comes up and you look and you go, okay, I'm going up against Brady. I'm afraid. I'm going up against Manning. I don't like that matchup. You know, I don't want to play against Rodgers, really. He scares me because I think he can beat him. Roethlisberger's one of those guys, I know he can be hot, but I know there's just as much chance he's going to do absolutely nothing. I'm not afraid of him.
When he's woeful, he's woeful.
But it can happen. He's exploded in two people's face in a row. I don't know how far they go. I don't know what to make of them exactly. I do respect Tomlin, too. I think Mike Tomlin has proven himself enough to get my respect. I always expect things before a season out of Pittsburgh. But this Roethlisberger thing, I mean, I'm a member of the fan club. I mean, but 6-2 back-to-back sixes, this is whole. Obviously, we've never seen it before. This is record. It's record-breaking stuff. He scares me. The Patriots don't play them, but I'll tell you what they do got coming up, though, in case you know, I'm sure you're fairly aware, but before the season's over, they've got to look at a Rodgers, they got to look at a Luck, they got to look at a Rivers, and even a Stafford. That's why Denver can't go home and with its, you know, head tucked between the legs kind of thing. They got a much better schedule coming up than New England. So, you know, that this was a nice thing for New England, but by hardly definitive.
There really are a lot of great quarterbacks in the National Football League right now. That's the real message that we've got here. Anyway, Jonesy, you want to talk a bit about basketball?
You know what,
basketball?
Bob, I told you, we're in Orlando Friday night, and Saturday afternoon I had the absolute great pleasure. Now, Wayne Embry is the senior advisor in Toronto here with the Raptors, and I just, every time I see Wayne, I run over, and it's like, you know, the cartoon Chester and the little dog, that I'm just all over Wayne. I want to know everything about everything from the civil basketball and the civil rights in the 50s when he was drafted, 60s when drafted by the St. Louis Hawks, and he couldn't go into hotels and people had to feed him in their houses. And I had the great pleasure of meeting with Wayne on Saturday, Oscar Robertson. And all I could think of was think of guys like Bob McCowan and you and Bill Conklin and people that, like, that I read as a kid talking about basketball. I mean, as a kid that grew up in Toronto and spent my summers in New York, I couldn't get enough of it. And then to meet Oscar was just unbelievable. He was LeBron James before there was LeBron James.
There was a an almost universal acclamation at the time that Oscar Robertson retired in 1974, that this was the greatest all-around player in NBA history, you know, below center. We always have this argument. I always have to separate centers and then the other guys that had the multi-skills. And Oscar Robertson was the standard of everything. And now I had a great mentor named Frank Power in basketball who wrote two books with Bob Cousy. And he said that technically, everything that Oscar Robertson did was how you teach it. You want to know how to dribble? Watch Oscar. You want to know how to shoot? Watch Oscar. You want to know how to position yourself and then go up for and do the proper timing for a rebound? Watch Oscar. You want to know how to pass? Watch Oscar. You know, the famous thing about Oscar, they always said if he had a 18-footer, he wanted a 15-footer. If he had a 15-footer, he wanted a 12-footer. If he had a 12-footer, he wanted a 5-footer. If he had a 5-footer, he wanted a layup. And, I mean, he backed guys in from mid-court sometimes.
Bob,
beyond belief.
I saw him in the hotel and I looked at him and he's Brian Walsh. I knew he was like late 60s, early 70s. I wasn't sure.
75.
Again, 75.
60.
And I remember seeing the end of his career as a kid in high school, Oscar, and the dawning of Kareem and the battles with Wilt at the end of his career. And I looked at him at 75 in the hotel and I still looked at him and said, how do you cover this guy? He looks like a senator now. He's distinguished, the graying hair. But it's like, how do you stop this guy?
Hey, Oscar was, there's a category of people that I, to which I now include LeBron. And I call master the game. Mastered the game. They mastered every aspect of the game, which includes the mental, which includes when to dispense whatever it is they needed. They had with the wherewithal to do whatever they wanted to do, whenever they wanted to do it, as they wanted to do it, in a special technique, a way that they wanted to do it. And he got there. Michael got there. Larry and Magic each got there. LeBron is there now. It's a very, 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 very limited group.
Is Kobe there? Was Kobe there, Bob?
Kobe there too. Yes, yeah. Positively. And they all different temperaments, and you know, to a degree, in certain ways. But and Michael's the most vicious one of all. You know, Kobe's the closest thing to Michael in that sense.
Well, you know, Bob, when I was talking to him and we got talking about crunch time and playing well, he said, It's the ability to do it when it's important. He said anybody can do it in the middle of the regular season, right? And when you think about it, Oscar, I mean, I remember watching a game at Boston Garden when Kareem hit a hook shot that was probably close to a three-pointer now to send it to a game seven against the Celtics, and Oscar was on that team. And, you know, doing it in the playoffs, Oscar had a terrific game. I remember that game as a kid, but being able to perform when you needed to perform at your best in the most important times was something that he always able to do.
That was game 6-74. And
yes.
I most remember many things about that night, but one of them was clutching my typewriter and hunching over because the crowd is coming over the table. No, they were. No security in Boston Garden those days to kill us. And then because the Celtics are going to win, John Havlicek has just had 9 points second overtime. They're winning. And then Kareem throws in the 17-foot hook shot to win the game. Oscar Robertson, here's the thing about Oscar, that among many, many other things, that someday I'm going to get him to dig it out. The thing that was Oscar Robertson, who, as you well know, is the only person ever to average a triple-double
yes.
for a season, was 1961-62. It wasn't ever a case of 41 night, 10 the next. Oscar Robertson was a metronome every night, 30, 31, 28, 35, 32, 30, for an 82-game schedule. I would be willing to bet that he had his, in a course of an 82-game schedule, to average the points he probably had 50 or 55 30-point games. I mean, it was relentless. Every single night, it was there. Every single night. No, he was remarkable, and I just hope that, you know, that these guys' names, and Havlicek, but I hate to tell you, but Havlicek was just as good, and you can read my book and read all about it, but those guys, people don't know enough about them now.
Yeah,
I was just going to say.
First they thought the game started with Dr. J.
True.
Then they thought the game started with Michael. Now they think the game starts with LeBron. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the last question I was going to ask you. He played during an era when only a fraction of the population paid attention. We all know by the late 70s, the NBA was on the verge of expiration.
Yeah.
There was virtually no television. What there was usually tape delayed. You wonder, Oscar Robertson, born 20 years too soon? Not more than that. And if he played in the 80s or into the 90s, I mean, we're talking about a guy who you'd make comparisons to Jordan. with.
Also, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, as opposed to New York, Boston.
That's right.
That makes a difference, too. And all this, I was just thinking as we were speaking and paying homage to these guys and the times. So, you know, my closing wish will be get well, Gordie Howe.
Mm. Well said. We thank you for that. Okay. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Bob. I'm in Boston on Wednesday.
Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. There you go. You guys can catch up.
Okay.
Thanks. When we come back, Blue Jays have made a few moves. We're pretty sure they're only the beginning of what is still to come. This isn't the end game. This is just the positioning for the end game. What does the manager think of this? We'll talk to him next, John Gibbons, when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Brady and Walker. Tomorrow morning, 5:30 to 9. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, McCown and Jones in our Toronto studios. Okay, let me start with this disclaimer for all you Blue Jay fans out there. John Gibbons, the manager, doesn't make the trades. He's not responsible for what's happened, good or bad. What are you laughing at, Gibbons?
But he is looking for a five-year, $25 million.
Yeah, you and me both, pal.
I figured you already got that.
Yeah, when you find... You think again. When you find one of those, you know, take my sorry ass with you, will you? You know, I'll be your caddy.
Okay.
How are you anyway?
What's going on? You slow news day or what?
Well, we got you on. It must be.
Exactly.
No, look, your pal Anthopoulos is rolling the dice here. He's made a lot of moves. I mean, they're not epic moves, but it's kind of setting the table for some stuff. I want to get to all those things. But first of all, I want to talk to you about your pal Seitzer. I thought you and he were tight. What the hell happened? He bailed on you.
Hey, Bob, we're very tight. But, you know, hey, this is a business. You know, and he didn't get the deal he was looking for with us, and Atlanta had some interest in him. And I mean, he goes way back with those guys. You know, Sherholtz was a GM in Kansas City when Kevin was drafted.
Right.
And John Hart was a GM when he played in Cleveland. So there was a connection there. They were looking for a guy. He just didn't get he was looking for a little security, couldn't get it. So it was strictly a business deal.
So you didn't piss him off or anything during the course of the year, right? That wasn't why he left.
No. Somebody must have.
Somebody must have, but it wasn't me.
said like a true manager. It wasn't me. It was not me. Like, you know, when you cut a guy, you said, I told the guy I liked him, but you didn't, right?
I managed good, but boy, did they play bad.
That's right. You know, hey, this is Alex's idea. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, boy. Throw him under the bus. So... So we'll put Seitzer aside. The other deal of significance here, that the one that happened just over the last 24 hours, was Adam Lind to Milwaukee. And Gibby, it's not a huge surprise, given a whole bunch of scenarios here. But give us your take on it. Is this a move that essentially is made to, does it give you more freedom to do some other things?
Yeah, Bob, it really does. It's going to be tough to lose Lindy. I mean, he's one of the better hitters around. But the way we looked at it, you know, we were using him as a platoon player. And, he's making a lot of money, and we needed, you know, to maybe free up some money for some other options, maybe bring in a couple other guys. So that's part of it. And, Alex he's hunting it pretty good right now. I mean, he's looking to bring in some different guys or at least making some run at some guys, and he's definitely going to need the money to do that.
John, if you don't get another left-handed bat, and you might, what's the best way to work around that?
Well, I got to believe we'll come up with something, you know, pretty good player. You know, he's going to be tough. Otherwise, you know, it'd be real tough to, you know, take Lindy's bat out of the lineup. And, you know, we're hoping that, you know, we can re-sign Cabrera. I mean, there's some other guys out there on the market, guys like Victor Martinez are out there. You know, I mean, those are long shots, but I mean, you know, I think Alex wants to make a run at all those guys, at least inquire into them. And but yeah, I mean, you know, when you lose Lindy and the possibility, you know, if Melky goes elsewhere, I don't know what kind of the money he's going to demand, then we're going to have to replace it with somebody. And you know, I think Alex can come up with somebody.
A bunch of things. Morrow, Santos, McGowan, none of their options picked up. Doesn't necessarily mean you couldn't still re-sign them, but at this point, it's probably unlikely.
Right.
As the manager, based on what we all saw of Aaron Sanchez late in the season out of the bullpen, is there any doubt in your mind that he's ready to start?
See, Bob, I'm excited to see him start, to be honest with you. But, there's some... There's some different ideas there. You know, he was so good coming out of the bullpen. You know, there's some, some voices that say, you know what, maybe he could be the closer. But I get excited thinking what he can do. You know, coming out there, maybe go 6, 7, 8 innings a night.
Yeah.
30 plus starts. But I mean, when it comes down to it, you got to have a strong bullpen. You got to have a guy to close out games, because you can play a perfect game every night, and you blow it in the ninth inning, and you know it just sucks the wind right out of you. So, there's some guys out there too that we could possibly try to sign that could end up being closer type guys, and then Sanchez can fit right into that rotation. But he can go either way with us, depending on how things stack up here this offseason. But I really like the thought of him being in the rotation, at least getting the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, me too. Well, and here's the other thing that Gibby, and you will know this, you can attest to this. Give me the list of, as best you can recall, the 21 or 22-year-olds that were closers. You know, that's a pretty short list. It's a
right.
pretty small list. Most of the guys, not all, but most of the guys that wind up being closers, being good closers, started as they were starters. And most of them were failed starters. So even if Sanchez goes in and isn't what we think he can be as a starter, it's never too late to put him in the bullpen. You already know that he's capable of doing it there in short spurts.
Oh yeah,
you know that's
you're
the scary
right
part.
The tough part is to do it the other way. You know, you start him in the bullpen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you got to crank him up, and depending on how deep into the season you are, you know, you may not be able to build him up to get to where you want. You know, so you can. That's a good. You can always fall back that way, give him the opportunity in spring to start and see how it looks. And but you know, he made a lot of strides. You know, as a starter last year, even before he got to the big league.
No, I know.
We were forced in. So everything's there. I mean, he's got the ability. You know, to be a frontline starter for a lot of years. Whether that happens or not, we'll find out. But everything's there.
When you did your exit chats? Is the message from the organization for him to stretch back out again and go to Dunedin with a mindset of being a starter?
Yeah, when I talked to him at the end of the year, he said, "Yeah, you prepare like you're going to start." And I mean, that's what he wants to do.
Right.
He'll gear everything towards that. And then, of course, you know, depending on what happens in the rotation, you know, if Alex somehow signs somebody else, a big name, you know, starting pitcher somehow, and he ends up in the bullpen, then that's the way it goes. But he's gearing everything to be a starter. And like I said, that's what he wants to do. He wants the opportunity to at least try, and I think that's important that we give that to him.
Gibby, I was listening to Bob driving in before I got here, and all the GMs out in Fanland.
All the phone-in guys. Yeah.
All the phone-in GMs and managers are worrying about, you know, some want to rebuild, some... I'm with Bob. I don't think you guys are at a place where you even think about blowing this thing up, but how close do you think you really are? And we know... there's a real fine line between being, you know, a long way away and being really close.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is a fine line. But we think we're close. There's going to be some new faces on the team next year, but I think we need that. I think we need some fresh blood. But, you know, when you get your cores, Batista, Reyes, Encarnacion, and those guys, I mean, unless you're going to rebuild, you got to move all those guys, you know, and then bring in multiple players, and we don't want to do that, because we think if we can strengthen our bullpen, you know, with what our young pitchers did last year, there's no guarantees they're going to be great,
mm-hmm.
but we saw enough to think that they can be, and then shore up, you know, what's going to happen in the outfield and play a little bit better defensively, we think we've got a shot. But we think, you know, we think the core is in place. We just got to piece it together around that. But, you know, we're also going to inject some new blood in there, and I think that'll do wonders for us.
With the manager, John Gibbons, speaking of Reyes, are you on board with giving him more days off, or at least more days as the DH, rather than playing shortstop as, you know, on a day-in, day-out basis, like maybe 145, 150, somewhere in there is the right number for him to start at short?
Yeah, Bob, I think we're going to have to. You know, he's, as the season wore on this year towards the end there, I mean, he was beat up pretty good, and it showed in his defense. He wasn't moving quite as well. I mean, he's one of those guys from when he first got to the big leagues as a young kid, he geared himself up to play every day, and that's what he wants to do. But I think the smart thing was give him a day here or there just to keep him strong, you know, and if the team set up where he can DH a few times, I think that would be even better. But yeah, I mean, these guys all start getting a little bit older. A lot of times they don't want to admit that, but you know, they start slowing down a little bit. They
sure.
You know, it really is a young man's game, and so we got, you know, it's our job to, you know, to be smart. And I mean, I get questioned a lot on that, but you know, we got to do the right thing to keep him strong for 6 months.
You know anything about this about Marco Estrada? I mean, we've all seen him pitch a little bit. He's been around for a while. Had a terrible year last year in terms of home runs. Gave up more home runs than any pitcher in baseball. But do you see, is he a bullpen guy, a long bullpen guy? Is that what you see?
Well, Bob, you know, he's a versatile guy. He's one of those guys. I was talking to his manager yesterday, Ron Renneke.
Yeah.
He said he's the perfect guy. You can pitch him out of the bullpen. You know, he can make some starts for you. You know, he may not make the 30-plus starts, but he's that perfect swing guy that, if you keep him fresh coming out of the bullpen, he's really, really good. Instead of having it, then you don't have to dip down to the minor leagues every time you need a spot start here or there. He could be that guy. So, I mean, he could add a lot of value to a team. And, you know, yeah, last year, I mean, he gave up a lot of home runs, so that, you know, that doesn't always sound good coming to Toronto. But, you know, he's got a tremendous changeup. He's a fastball, basically a fastball changeup guy. And, you know, I mean, he's experienced. He knows what he's doing. And maybe we're hoping that a change of scenery here will do him wonders.
Yeah. Gibby, I was going to ask that. How much, I mean, guys go from one league to the next, and I know we have a lot more, you know, interleague stuff now, but, you know, how much is a change of scenery going to help somebody like that? Just pitching in, you know, a different league, facing different people.
Well, I mean, it's usually tougher, I think, going to the American League because, I mean, you're facing thicker lineups. So that,
yep.
But a lot of times what happens, you know, you're in one place for a couple of years, and maybe you're coming. You had a tough year, and a lot of things working against you. Maybe your mindset isn't right. You know, you go somewhere else, you get on top of yourself again a little bit. You bear down a little bit more. You know, you got a positive outlook, and you're more focused. And you know, sometimes that helps guys get over that hump, and you know, turns them into, you know, what everybody expects. You know, but then there's no question the talent's, and he's gonna you know, fit a role for us.
All right, we gave you all the softball questions so far, Gibbons. Now let's get to the meat and potatoes here. If the season starts tomorrow, you're filling out the lineup card. With what you have available now, who's your center fielder?
With what we have available, well, come on. You expect me to answer that?
Yeah, I do. You know, paused for effect there, so you were thinking about it. All you got to do is spit it out now. Who's your guy?
Well, okay, if it was to start tomorrow, I mean, the season would start till tomorrow, what we had today. You know, from what I saw last year, I would love to see Pompey out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? It was a short audition, but I tell you what, he played very, very good, and we think he's got a chance to be a hell of a player. So, I think we're going to be all right. I think our defense is going to get better in the outfield. That'll help. You know, the big question mark is Melky coming back or not. And
but
we'll see. I mean, there's some moves that have to be made, and Alex is he's out working on those right now.
So the other question was Cabrera, and I know you can't answer the question because even Cabrera himself probably doesn't know what the answer is. He's going to go to free agency. He's going to see what's out there. But based on your conversations with him last year, do you feel good about the chances? Do you feel optimistic, or do you have any sense at all as to what the chances are of Melky coming back?
You know, Bob, I really don't have any sense at all. I know he loves it in Toronto. He really does. But this is probably his last shot at free agency, you know, so I'm sure he's going to explore that and see what he can get. I mean, they all, you know, they all chase the money in one way.
Sure, they
do. I mean, that's just the way the game works, you know. So, I mean, he'd probably be crazy not to. But I think in the back of his mind, he really likes it here. And you know, if things are close, I would think he'd probably lean our way. But you know, some teams out there that can get off crazy too, throwing money around. But we'll see.
Do you think you might get a hometown discount, though, Gibby? I mean, when you think about it, he's a real important piece of the core that you were talking about a little while earlier.
Right. You know, I don't know. Does anybody ever really give hometown discounts? I
mean, nah, not me.
You know, you hear that all the time, but, you know, I don't see that. I don't see that happening, to be honest with you. You know, but if, like I said, though, if it's close, you know, he likes playing here. I mean, he likes his teammates. And, you know, one thing you find out, guys, if they had a chance to play in Toronto, they all enjoy it. They love it, you know. So the fact that he's done that, you know, might go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Who makes the decision on replacing Seitzer? Is that your call entirely?
Well, both Alex and I, you know, we'll talk it out. You know, we should hopefully know something here in the next week, I would hope. But, you know, I mean, it did catch us a little bit off guard. You know, we expected him to be back. And but it's a, you know, it's a business. I mean, he's got to take care of his family. And, you know, he was wanted over there. He really and just couldn't come to terms here. But it's a business.
Gibby, they always talk about approach with hitting. Do you look for somebody who's got, in terms of philosophy, a guy that might have the same approach with your hitters?
Yeah, yes. You know, one thing about Kev, you know, he was kind of a complete hitter, use all the fields.
Yep.
And you know, one thing people always talked about, well, you know, I mean, he took some knocks about, well, he wants the guys to hit the other way too much, and that wasn't the case at all. The whole idea behind that was his approach was keeping guys on the ball longer and the ability to hit the ball the other way. You can still pull it, what have you, but wasn't trying to get guys to go up there and just flip balls the other way. And so I think he had the perfect approach to be a good hitter. Well, that's what his approach is, what the real good hitters do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next guy coming in, I think he needs to be similar, you know. You know what? Most of them are. You can talk to 100 hitting coaches, and probably 90% of them, they're all going to say the same thing, you know. So a lot of times you lean on, you know, people that know these guys or have had experience with them. That's when you really find out. But, you know, hitting's really, well, it's not basic, but, I mean, there's basic fundamentals, and they all try to teach it the same way, basically. So, but, yeah, that's going to be important because, I mean, what happens is, you know, now you get a new hitting coach, and we've been going through a few of them lately. You know, players start hearing different things, you know, each year after year. So we want to get at least bring somebody in that's comparable, that kind of preaches the same thing, if he's out there.
Yeah, maybe it can last more than a year. This will be your 12th hitting coach in 20 years. I'm getting tired. I can't keep track of them all.
Apply for the job.
Yeah, that's what I need. I need to work for you.
Is there more money in a...
No, 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 no.
He'd be buying Advil all the time, Gibby.
Yeah. I love your show and I love your style, but the pay is so cheap I won't come back for a while. That's all I got to tell you about that job.
I got you.
Listen, you have yourself I know Thanksgiving's right around the corner, having yourself a swell Thanksgiving and the holiday season if we don't talk to you, but we'll try and catch up with you before Christmas and... have a better idea maybe of where this ball club's going. It's always good of you to take time for us. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, Bob. You bet.
Talk to you soon. John Gibbons, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Hitting coach. Give me a break.
You couldn't hit water if you fell out of a boat.
I can teach these guys how to hit. I tell you what I would teach them how to do is bunt. I don't understand why that's so difficult.
Nobody teaches it. At the minor league level, everybody's swinging for the fence. It's a fundamental. It's got to be taught early.
You know, guys go in the hitting cage, first two, three pitches, they lay down a bunt, and then they forget about it for the rest of their lives. We got to go. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Bobcat.
That's Paul Jones. Thanks to Gibby. Thanks to Bob Ryan. Thanks to you for watching or listening. See you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.